It's a perfect spring morning and you join us for the third of our Living World programmes, which are part of the BBC Spring Watch event.
Bumblebee, here, there we are.
Here in search of exactly that, the bumblebee, the little teddy bears of the
really fast
insect world. Yeah. And with me, the voice on my left is Mike Edwards, Mr. Bumblebee himself, and Edie Jolly from Bug Life. Edie, first of all, before we start, tell us a little bit about Bug Life and your involvement with the bumblebee.
Well, Bug Life was set up a couple of years ago. It's the only charity that works for all invertebrates. And the Bumblebee Project, I've been developing the project for the National Bumblebee Survey, which has been named the Big Bee Hunt.
This, Mike, is the third insect we've looked at as part of the Spring Watch event. We've looked at the peacock butterfly, we've looked at the seven-spot ladybird, and now we are looking at the bumblebee, which suggests there's only one bumblebee, but there are more species.
No, there are many more. 22, 23, 24, however detailed you want to be. Six of those are cuckoos, and we'll leave those for a moment, what they're doing. Of the rest of those, the 16 that are left, only six are likely to be seen in gardens. And that's probably because they're originally developed in exactly these kind of positions here, edges of woodlands, and gardens are edges of woodlands.
It has to be said, it is a perfect spring morning, isn't it? We're in a chestnut coppice woodland here in Sussex, which means our soils are fairly light. We're on a south-facing bank. But is that significant, Mike? Will we find more species of bumblebee here than perhaps, say, somewhere in the north or west or further east?
Overall, yes, but the six widespread species in gardens, five of them go over the whole country. There's a big one. Look at that. Can you see the back end?
Yes, red.
Red.
Yeah, right.
Black and red. That's the first one I've seen this year, that one. A thing called Bombus lapidaris. You can see her swinging along. Can you see in front of her? If you follow down behind, she's gone down. What she's doing is just what you said here, looking for a nest site.
Right. Now, she went in about...
She went in near that stick.
On our left-hand side.
And you probably see her crawling around the ground. Isn't that amazing? No sign of her. You saw her go in.
There she is. Now she'd gone under that chestnut leaf.
That's right.
There.
She's just going down a bit further. You can see the swinging spike. Lovely, long black body with just a red tail. No yellow stripes on her at all.
Edie, we can tell that is a bumblebee from its big, furry, black, hairy body. But in simple sense, how can we tell the difference between bumblebees and any other sort of bees?
Well, for me as a layperson, learning about bumblebees, the way I distinguish them is they are big and fat and furry, and they move slightly differently, I think, to honeybees or smaller bees. And they sort of hover around, especially this time of the year, looking for nests, and that you see them sort of hovering over the ground and humming, and they really do buzz, don't they? And a lot of them are stripy, but of course that one we just saw now wasn't stripy, Bombus lapidaris, that's the red-tailed bumblebee. And that's the one that we're hoping, when we develop our project in spring 2006, that we're going to get people to look for, because it's so easy to recognise.
Is this a species that's on the decline like many?
Well, that's the interesting question that we'd like to find out the answer to. It appears that even the common six species may well have declined, especially in the sort of central area of the country. What people can actually do to help that is to ensure that you have a coverage of flowering plants, sort of early spring, late autumn, and even the winter flowering plants. So there's lots that people can do, definitely.
Now look at that. Isn't that amazing? And another, look, that's a different bee. Now there's one you can
now,
catch.
You can see the yellow stripe, orange tail again, but the yellow stripe in the thorax.
Yeah. That makes it
that's
very
the
different,
middle bit, doesn't it? And there's another yellow stripe above the orange tail.
And the, one we saw was, the one we saw was all black, wasn't it, with a red tail, so that's a difference.
That's right, so these are two red tails that you're going to get in your garden. You see she's cleaning herself up there, warming up, south-facing bank, you can warm up, she's got the energy to fly. They're amazing, these things. They'll fly at temperatures below zero. They can actually warm themselves up by buzzing the muscles in the thorax. I take it with a net. She's just come out hard, there she's got underneath. Now,
right, well held. Mike has with him, of course, his bee catching net. Now, a little safety warning here I think is probably appropriate, Mike, because bumblebees, although they are loath to, they do sting, and some people can have allergic reactions to their sting.
Yes, you've got to work hard to get stung. I mean, I'm doing some pretty silly things with it here, and I'll tell a little story, a very silly thing I did when I first started teaching. There was a bumblebee on the window of the classroom. And I looked at it and thought, oh, that's a male. Now, males can't sting because they haven't got the ovipositor, which is the thing that makes the sting. They don't lay eggs, see. And I picked this thing up. And of course I was wrong, it stung me down the base of my tail. And I sat down for 10 minutes.
So even the experts couldn't be wrong.
That's right, I've now managed to catch my neck beautifully on a bit of thorn. And as I don't want to rip it to pieces, I'm going to undo it carefully.
Talking about stings, but, Mike, I found out bumblebees can sting more than once, unlike honeybees that can only sting once.
Yeah, no, that's all tied up with their life story. Because basically, honeybees only sting and keep the sting in you because one of the functions of workers is nest defence. The nest is big, it's got lots of pollen in it, it's got lots of nectar in it, it's a big prize, and it's there for years. And so it's worth sacrificing a few workers in order to get something to go away. And that's gone so far that they actually pull the sting out, it's barbed, and it gets pulled out of the worker who is sacrificed. And that sting actually carries on pumping, the bag pumps the venom into you after the bees pull away. Now, a bumblebee, even the biggest colonies of bumblebees, have only got 200 or 300 workers in instead of 20 or 30,000 workers. So you don't waste time stinging something unless it's a real threat. And as I said, picking it up, that's a threat. Mm. But even there, very often, they'll roll over in the back, wave alarm, and go, oh, go away, go away.
I've seen them doing that.
Anyway, yeah, that tends to be on the nest. What I've done with this one here, she's in a special handler. This is made for marking queen honeybees, but it's a brilliant thing for me because you'll get to you there, Lana. You can describe this bee beautifully because you've got it all held steady.
It's wonderful. Now, this is a little plastic clear tube about 2 inches in diameter, I suppose, in which there's a little plunger with a soft, spongy end to it, which means I can gently push this bumblebee up to the end, which gives me a perfect view of her underbelly, which is black and wonderful, and these lovely golden ginger hairs on the end of her abdomen and the two yellow stripes, one just behind her head and one just under where her wings join the body. Now, we assume this is a queen because it's queen time of the year.
That's right. Here's a terrestris coming down towards us. Can you see her with a white tail and the one yellow stripe on
it's gone in.
Let's see if it's gone in. She's looking down.
Creep in on it.
Here.
Well done. I'm not easy to catch some butterflies.
Well, they are when they're sitting quietly like that. When they're sitting quietly like that, they are. Now, this is terrestris, much bigger. And it's got a deeper buzz as well.
All right, now this is one. Go on, put that next to the microphone. This is Bombus terrestris.
Yep.
Named terrestris because it's found in the ground.
Yep. Yep.
And this is Bombus
fratorum.
Fratorum because it's a woodland species. And that's a different buzz.
It's a smaller bee. Ah, I nearly got the Lionel stung then.
Let that one go. The plunger came out of the plug.
Well, I don't want to put them both together, but here we go. We've got to put this one into the plunger. You can hear that deep buzz there.
She's a lot bigger, isn't she?
Yeah, much, much bigger.
Fatter, generally.
Interesting, this one has a nest with 200 or 300 workers in it, possibly more, produces 50 or 60 queens, and takes 4 or 5 months to produce a complete nest cycle. The little one, the Praetorium you're looking at, the nest's finished in 6 or 7 weeks. Really fast, but only produced 6 queens. Tiny little nest.
But at this moment in time, she'll be the only individual in her particular colony.
She is the only individual in her colony. In fact, she hasn't even got a colony yet. If you look at the margins of the wings here, they're clean. Oh, you can't, she won't stop buzzing. They're completely unfrayed. You see how sweet that? Once she's been out for 2 or 3 weeks looking, and hunting around, the edge of the wings get quite tatty, and what happens once she gets a ball of pollen about the size of an old half crown, and she moulds it together, forms it with a saddle in the middle so she can sit in the middle, and on the edge of that she lays 6 eggs. In front of her in the nest she has a little pot she made of wax which she secretes from scales under her body, and she fills that up with nectar. She sits on there, takes nectar from the pot when it's not very warm or it's in the middle of the night, and she sits there and makes this buzzing sound she's doing now. And what she's doing is raising the temperature of this pollen ball, because as soon as she can get those workers out, the better. She hasn't then got to be doing the dangerous job, being out where the birds and everything else hit her, including the cars. The workers do that. She stays there because she's the only source of fertilised eggs. The workers are females, but they're not being fertilised, and they can only lay eggs that produce males. She actually controls those workers and tells them that they can't produce males. They don't want males yet.
She actually makes a judgment then, a value judgment as to what's available and what the needs of the colony are.
Absolutely.
That's absolutely amazing, isn't it? Now, the major difference between her and the Bombus pretorum is the fact, although she's got two yellow stripes, one is at the back of the head, the same yes. in Bombus pretorum, the yellow stripe that was on the abdomen, the front yellow stripe on the abdomen of pretorum was a little further forward, and instead of having those lovely orange ginger hairs right at the end of her abdomen, this one has rather pale blonde, almost white hair.
Almost white, yeah.
And she's bigger.
She's
and,
much bigger. She's about twice blacker. The volume.
And this one, I see, Mike, is already carrying her load of mites.
Yep, now she's got a special place for that. Actually, in the back of the thorax there, there's lots of people complain, oh, these poor bumblebees with lots of mites on. She actually carries them around because they're predatory. When they get the nest going, they jump off the queen and they hunt around the bottom of the nest. And anything that drops the bottom, they tend to eat. And particularly, there are flies and there is even a moth that likes attacking bumblebee nests. And these mites prey on them. So they're actually carried around. Bumblebees do have mites that are parasites, but they're inside the breathing tubes of the bumblebee, and they're tiny, tiny pinprick things. The same things you see on the sides are actually being carried. Now, sometimes the nests and the female carries so many mites away with her, she is absolutely smothered. She gently combs those off, but she has these special pockets to carry them because they're wanted.
Let's let this lady go. Now, what is she going to do? Given that the bumblebee life cycles are very similar in their events, what they do, take us through the life cycle. What's going to happen to her now?
Well, she's going to hunt around. She's going to look for a place for her nest. The nest will be underground. It'll be built in an old vole nest or mouse nest because that's basically warm. When they get near a hole, you can see the antenna waggling away, and they're clearly smelling because their nose is on the antenna, you know, not in their face like ours at all. And she's getting quite upset here. Look at the great big mandibles she's got.
That's mouth parts.
That's the mouth parts. It's the jaws. She wants to get out of here. Look at that.
Rum, definitely rum, trying rum. To bite,
yeah.
isn't she?
Yeah, she'd far rather do that than sting you, actually. I'll let her go, then.
Yeah, that do. Do. Doesn't want to go now.
No, she's a bit daft. She's got a bit disorientated. Come on.
Wonderful. Right, she's found her mouse
nest. She's found her mouse nest. Right, she's then going to collect this pollen into the ball. She's going to sit on the ball of pollen. She's going to lay some eggs around the outside, and she's going to warm it up. She warms it up, gets the first workers out, and they're tiny because she's had to do all the collecting herself. And the minute those workers come out, and they've hardened up, their skins are hardened, their wings have dried up properly, they start learning the countryside around them. The first thing they come out of the nest, they fly up, and you can see them when they come out. They stand at the entrance, sniff, antenna waggle again. And they go up and they start making this lovely circular flight. It's only about a metre in radius to start, but it gets bigger and bigger. And as it gets bigger, they go up and up. And eventually they're going around 100 metres above you. And what they're doing is mapping out where the nest is.
Mapping how? Looking for a local...
Yes, because one of the things that happened, if we were beside a founded nest, which is going to be very lucky this time of the year, and you stand beside these and a worker comes out, you can see it stop, look at you, go off, and do the swinging flight again, because we've got some new trees suddenly grown here, haven't we?
So bumblebees have very good eyesight.
They have extremely good. There was a chap called Chris O'Toole who did a little bit of informal research on how big a map they had. And he was working at the University Museum in Oxford. He collected some worker bumblebees. He took them in his car and released them at different distances from Oxford, where they came from. The furthest one to come back came from the big power station right up the A34, 8 miles away, and it was back in 20 minutes.
Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah, they do home. They know where they are, and this is one of the big things about their life cycle, which you hadn't realised, is how big an area each individual nest actually covers. The nest is the organism. It's not the individual workers.
Yeah. That's Bombus terrestris again, is it?
Yes.
Yeah. See, even I'm getting to recognise them already.
Oh, that is Bombus lapidaris. That's the fellow we're on,
right?
Or the lady.
The lady.
And there she goes.
Yeah. Got it.
She's in. I can hear her buzzing. I can't see her. Yes. With these bumblebees, because they have a very nice sting, you always check you can see them before you pick the net up.
Yeah.
Well, usually. Right, here she goes.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
There you are, Lionel. You can have a nice look at that one while I disentangle this net.
She's going round and round and round in this little tube trying to get out, isn't she?
She is the blackest velvet black with this lovely orangery-red tail, which gives her the only common bumblebee name, isn't it? The red-tailed bumblebee or other common...
Well, I'm not at all happy about that. There are lots of different times, and really my feeling is, you know Bombus fine, you cope with your two names, cope with their two. Doesn't matter what it sounds like.
Now, we've seen three or four species out of the 22 species
that
are on the British
list. Look at the terrestrial, look at that. You've got the stripes that are on the yellow and the white back end.
Edie did a manful stripe.
Whoa. When they fly away from you like that, they look absolutely black. You can't see the rest, and they aren't black. It's just the light against them. And they're so big, they block out the light, and they look your eyes black. You have to look down on these things to see the colours. There's another one. Oh, now there's another one of our commoner species. Lovely.
Right, now let
you're
me...
You're asking me about
let
that.
Let me let this one go first, our red-tailed
Brilliant.
Job. Come along, lady. Good.
Right, now this, I was not expecting this morning at all. This is our longest tongued common species, and we'll get into this tongue thing about them, because that ties up with the sort of flowers they go to.
So this looks just like the one we had before,
Tim. Well, it doesn't.
You have a look at the number of stripes.
Let's have a closer
look. Look at the number of stripes on that one, on the thorax. Shall I try and turn her over? There's a little twist to this. You watch this. Now you can see one, two, and then the first stripe is right at the very front of the abdomen.
Ah, right.
Whereas there's a black stripe on the other ones.
Now I can see them. Now I don't advise anybody to try and do that. It's only
not your fingers. She's getting very angry.
To do that. Now she's got one yellow stripe, exactly the same as Terrestris, just behind her head. There's another yellow stripe at the end of her thorax where her wings are attached, and then another one at the start of her abdomen.
Yeah. Look at that tongue.
Oh, right.
I mean, it's
enormous. Is that a comment on something you've just said? It's poking its tongue out. We have a bumblebee in Old Money that's about an inch long, and her tongue must be approaching nearly half. That nearly half
over long. That, I think, yeah. She gets it fully out. This one, you can see, as it comes into a flower, it slings its tongue out, and you can see it really sticking down. Many of the other species, it's quite hard to see the tongue because it's under half that length.
Now, which came first, the flower or the tongue? Well,
this all seems to be tied up. The tongue length, the sort of pollen they go for, and the complexity of the flowers. There is definitely a relationship, and we think it's something that's been driven evolutionary.
Which species is this?
This is Bombus hortorum.
To do with horticulture?
Gardens. I'm going to let her go. She's getting a bit stressed and hot in there. And there she goes.
Thank you.
And off she
goes. Bye-bye.
Went. Here's another one swinging down, nest searching. Above it, a little solitary bee. No, that's a male solitary bee.
And what's he doing? Is he looking for...
He's just getting warm. Okay. That just tells you what he's trying to do. He's trying to find other bees to mate with now. Very good shots. They'll mate with each other. They'll mate with anything they think looks like a bee.
He's trying to mate with a little bumblebee.
Yeah, solitary bee with about a tenth of the size of the bumblebee.
What's that?
Oh, that is a bee fly. That does look like a bumblebee, doesn't it?
Right.
Can you see? Oh, he's going to take it away from here. I can't see the wing now. I can't see it. It's gone. Got a black bar on the front
there
edges.
Yeah.
Hovers like a bumblebee. It's got a very long tongue, but the tongue doesn't get folded away when you see it going into the flower.
But this will be one of those mimics, pretending to be a bee because bees sting. Yeah.
Yep, that's right. And the other thing why it needs to do that is it actually it's a parasite of solitary bees.
Oh, you got another one.
Yeah.
Gosh, she's getting good with this net.
I think it's a terrestris.
Yep. Oh, well, hang on. There you are, lady. You can try that. Lift the net up here because she's going the wrong way.
Okay. Sort of encourage her to walk back up.
She will tend to go upwards.
Right.
Get her right up so you're not. Okay. Then just take your time. That's right. Go on, you're okay now. If you hold the net with one hand there.
Hold the net with one hand.
That's right.
Put the tube inside the net and catch
her right.
In the tube. Like that. Oh, you can hear a buzzing. She doesn't like that.
Right.
No. And then put the plunger in just to. Cuckoo. Oh,
yes.
Let's hope so.
Let's have a look. Right, well, I think Edie has actually cracked the biscuit here and she's found one of the cuckoo bumblebees.
It's a slightly darker yellow stripe just behind her
head,
more orange than yellow.
Quite tawny, isn't it?
And look at the tail.
That's quite different, isn't it? Because there are two patches either side of the abdomen rather than
that's
the stripe.
Right. No stripe.
They're
patches
very
inside.
Yellow.
There is a bit of a stripe sometimes in the abdomen. These are very, very variable, these species. But those two yellow patches inside are really, really obvious.
Mm.
And the abdomen, the plate underneath the fur shows through. It's all quite shiny.
So how am I a cuckoo then, Mike?
It's a cuckoo because it doesn't make its own nest. It waits for a terrestris who's got a small nest, a nice little bundle of pollen. It slides in the side and then sits there until it gets the scent of the nest. When it's got the scent of the nest up, it'll start crawling around, and probably a week at a time, the queen terrestris may try and fight with it, but very often she's dominated by chemicals this one releases. She then becomes a bit of a worker, and this one starts laying the eggs. And that nest is doomed. It will never produce its own.
queens and work as a terrestris. It just goes on to produce males and females of this thing, Bombus vestalis.
If we are asking people as part of the Spring Watch scheme to say that they found a bumblebee, it is important that they identify it as a species. So what are the principles of the identification of the bumblebee?
The main things to look for are the stripe patterns and the tail colour. But a photograph, modern digital cameras will take quite a tolerable photograph quite easily. It's good. If people think they want to try and identify anything else, go to the website, log on, try and give the best description you can. That will be passed on to me from Phenology, and I will make a best guess and let you know back.
And by the time that Bug Life get their survey off next year there'll
yes.
be lots of trained people because of Spring Watch who will be versed in the identification of all our species of bumblebees, which would be good for you.
That would be great for us, yes. But of course, the part of our survey is going to develop into training people on one day training courses as well, so we'll be able to train them up to at least recognize the difference between a cuckoo bumblebee and a bumblebee itself, and also the six main species of bumblebees as well. I thought, Mike, with the cuckoo bee, doesn't have to have that pollen basket.
Absolutely,
does it?
Right. That's a harder thing to see if you haven't dealt with
see,
it. But
yes.
If you've got this one here, and you look at her back leg, you have a look there, lying on.
Yeah.
Can you see there?
Yeah.
Now, if we get another one, you'll find that back leg on a bumblebee has got a shiny centre with a set of hairs around the side of it, making a basket, which is where the pollen's stuck. She doesn't need to get any pollen because she just lets the other workers do the work.
So if you see something in your garden that's definitely got pollen on its back leg, it's going to be a bumblebee.
It's definitely
going to
be a social bumblebee.
Yes.
Well, there you are. That's where we must end. So if you see a bee in your garden with a pollen basket, it's bound to be a bumblebee, and we'd like to hear from you on our website. That is bbc.co.uk/springwatch. We'll